Another report says federal employees are overpaid. The numbers the Cato Institute uses are accurate, but they're not true. Jeff Neal is Senior Vice President at ICF International, former Chief Human Capital Officer at the Department of Homeland Security. And Jeff writes at the ChiefHRO.com blog and is here now to explain what he means when he writes that. That's a pretty curious statement, and it's counterintuitive, Jeff. What does it mean?
Well, what it means, Francis, is that the numbers they cite are factually correct. It's just that the numbers don't tell the story. You know, they're making this outrageous claim that federal employees are overpaid relative to the private sector by something like 68%. And they use some Department of Labor statistics, and the numbers are accurate numbers, but they're not an apples-to-apples comparison of pay. So they're comparing the federal workforce that's mostly concentrated in more technical, higher-level jobs with the rest of the workforce. And the rest of the workforce includes people who are making hamburgers at the local burger joint. It includes people who are doing cleaning duties. It includes people who are doing the landscaping, like the ones who are out in front of my house right now, with that leaf blower, you might hear in a minute. So it includes a very large number of low-wage, low-skill jobs. So, the number they say is technically correct, but it's not the right comparison. You should compare job to job. You know, if you wanted to see how federal employees' pay stacks up, compare an IT specialist to an IT specialist. Compare a physician to a physician. Don't compare an IT specialist to a fast food worker.
I know a lot of times we talk about data and how important data is to understanding and making decisions about things. I wonder if this might not be a case, though, Jeff, where using anecdotal evidence, because there's a ton of it, isn't the way to do it. I don't see or hear a lot of conversation from people in the contracting space that surrounds the federal government, where those folks are worried about all of their people are going to resign and quit and go to work for the government. I mean, we see people do that. But overall, the chatter seems to revolve around your former colleagues in the human capital area in government worried about people, their best talent, leaving to go to work for contractors. Is that a fair assessment of what you hear and see too?
Yes, it is. So if these numbers were accurate, there would be this mass of people wanting to go to work for the federal government, and when people got there, they would never leave. And so the numbers are clearly bogus numbers. And my view is that the Cato Institute is a think tank, but it knows what it thinks. You know, it's not one that is looking for something, that looks at a subject and says, okay, let's learn all we can about this subject and learn what's going on and then draw conclusions. Their approach generally is, here's what we believe, now let's go find some numbers that can back it up. And in this case, that's what they've done. They've come up with numbers that support their ideological point of view.
You write in this blog post, feds are overpaid or not. The truth is, we don't have any idea how federal pay really compares to the private sector. It's almost certain the Cato Institute numbers are useless. It's almost certain that the Federal Salary Council numbers are also useless. Those numbers you write earlier in the piece report that federal workers are underpaid by an average of 35%. And you write, we can't even get a credible fake number.
Yes.
That's not encouraging, my friend.
Well, it's true, though. You know, when you look at here we've got two sets of numbers. I think one says 36% underpaid, and one says 68% overpaid. So we've got a set of numbers with a range of 104%. And I honestly don't know anybody who actually knows something about compensation who believes that federal employees are underpaid by 36%. yet every year the Federal Salary Council comes out with these numbers, and they pronounce that federal employees, you know, the pay comparability needs, you know, is so far off, and they need a 36% pay raise to be at parity with the private sector. That number is just a lot of hokum. And we know that is. And telling people that it's realistic that we would spend tens of billions of dollars in pay raises for federal employees to give everybody this massive pay raise is silly. It's not going to happen. It's not realistic. It's a made-up number that's, in many respects, every bit as made up as the Cato Institute number. So what we've got with those two numbers are dueling bogus numbers. And neither one of them is accurate. Neither one of them is really grounded in reality. And neither one of them really fairly represents the real numbers around federal pay. Nobody wants to do the hard work on federal pay. And there's a lot of hard work to do to really figure out if federal employees are overpaid or underpaid or just right. We have classification problems that would need to be fixed to really get a handle on it. There's been an enormous amount of grade inflation in the last 15 or 20 years. Lots of jobs are not even remotely close to being graded based on the classification standards now. So we don't even have a good baseline to start from to figure out whether federal employees are overpaid or underpaid or just right. So there's a lot to be done. And then it's all wrapped up in politics. If someone just said, okay, let's design a pay system, you could get smart people in a room who understand compensation and understand people's motivations and understand all these other things, and they could come up with a system that would work. The problem is that we wouldn't do it that way. We would do it in a political world, and we would have people on both sides of the aisle fighting over it. And some of those people would have an ideological point of view that they would want to drive the outcome. And instead of starting with the idea that we will do what is right and we will do what is fair and we will do something that really is based on real, honest-to-God numbers and that tells the truth, we would start with a political process. And I don't know if you watched television yesterday, but sometimes you might want to think our political process is badly broken. So I wouldn't encourage us to submit federal pay, because the pay for 2 million federal employees is incredibly important to us. I wouldn't suggest submitting that to the current political process, because God only knows what would come out the other end.
You've come up with the greatest band name, Dueling Bogus Numbers, that I think we've had in the history of the In-Depth program, Jeff. I'm going to write that down and use that in case I ever need a name for a band. You followed up on your first post, Feds Are Overpaid or Not, with a part two. What did people point out to you after your first piece that caused you to want to go back and revisit this issue?
Well, I mean, there were some people who misunderstood some of the points I made. Like, for example, I had said in the original post that there is value to job security, but it's hard to put a number on it, and it's also hard to make any conclusions based on job security. And some people thought that I meant that a whole list of things, like the value of retirement benefits, which I'd also mentioned, were hard to calculate, and those are not. The value of retirement benefits is something you can very easily calculate. But the value of job security is difficult to put a number on. And the reason is that value is dependent on the individual. If I'm a risk-averse person and someone says, here, I'll give you a job that pays X number of dollars a year, and you'll almost certainly never be fired, they probably would be willing to take a lower rate of pay for that job security, if they're risk averse. Where another employee who's similarly situated doing the same type of work might not be risk averse at all and might say, well, no, give me as much money as you possibly can, and I'll take my chances on losing my job. And in those cases, those folks wouldn't be that motivated by lower pay for job security. So the whole job security argument is one that is valid. There is clearly value to federal job security, but the value is dependent on the individual. So it's very hard to make public policy decisions and pay decisions for 2 million employees based on something where those 2 million employees may have 2 million different opinions about what it really is worth. So I wanted to clarify that. And I'd been told by some people that it really didn't matter what the job classifications were. And I wanted to clarify a bit there that it really does. You know, this overgrading is kind of permeating the federal workforce, particularly within the D.C. metro area. And so you really do need to kind of get a handle on that before you start looking at what rates of pay ought to be assigned to a particular grade level. You know, the grade levels have gone up very, very high for a lot of jobs. And when I first got to the Department of Homeland Security, just give you an anecdotal example, we had four GS-14 non-supervisory staffing specialists in the HR office that I was running. They were doing GS-11 level work. I mean, clearly, based on job standards, that was GS-11 level work. They were classified as GS-14s. And I see that type of stuff around government all the time now. Yeah, I would be willing to bet you a month's pay that if you took a random sample of 500 jobs in the Metro DC area, that at least a quarter of them would be overgraded by one or more grades. And that does make a difference when you're driving the comparisons.
How much of that's been pushed? We're almost out of time. How much of that's been pushed, do you think, though, by a three-year pay freeze where a supervisor said, if I really want to keep somebody and I want to make sure that they try to stay engaged, I can raise the grade on a job and get them a little bit more money so that they don't go out the door? I'm not suggesting that's a great way of running the business, but it might be a plausible explanation.
I think it would be a plausible explanation if it had started when the pay freeze started. But this grade inflation has been going on for probably 15 to 20 years. So what it is, the general schedule is an old, inflexible system that's not designed for the workforce we have today. And so managers, in trying to find ways to get talent, do things to make themselves more competitive. So when they advertise a position as a GS-12 and they don't find the kind of candidates they want, lo and behold, the duties suddenly morph into a GS-13. And then they hope to get somebody better. And they do that all the time. And it's not that they're doing something evil. It's not that they're trying to rob the taxpayers. But the effect is the same. The effect is that they are certifying a set of duties that are not accurate, so they're falsifying a document, they're misclassifying a job, and because that person's pay is based on that document, they're misappropriating money based on a falsified document. So we can give them credit for good intentions, but the good intentions lead to something that is actually very bad behavior.
That's great insight as always, Jeff. Thank you very much for coming on. The pieces are titled Feds Are Overpaid or Not, and parts 1 and 2, and I thank you for being on as always, my friend.
Oh, delighted. Thank you for having me.